Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, I'm Carol the Coach, and this is Sexual Addiction and Sex Help with Carol the Coach. And I am so happy to be with you. As a matter of fact, this is what I do for a living. I work with sexual addiction, and I work with partners. And so tonight we're going to be talking to a woman by the name of Wendy, who has really worked on her own recovery in conjunction with her husband's recovery. So now, here's a little promo from Carol the Coach.
Carol the Coach, sex, love, and relationships. We talk about it here.
Carol the Coach, compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist. I can be your personal life coach, and I can help you with your issues. There are no problems too small or too big. You can talk about anything.
Speaker, columnist, radio TV host, and commentator. Carol the Coach brings messages of wellness and empowerment within reach of everyday people. Every day.
Almost 5 years ago, I lost my soulmate in an accident. He was killed in a plane crash. Life just for me has seemed to stop.
There are groups all over the city. I mean, I teach one. It is a specific way to start thinking so that you shift how you see the world, which then shifts your energy, and then you feel better and you actually see things differently.
Carol the Coach. Always available to at carolthecoach.com.
Now, I've got Russell on the line.
I'm 47 years old. I'm a truck driver. I am married. I have a wife in San Francisco.
Okay.
I haven't been home in 6 months. My thing is, I don't know if I have a sex addiction or what the problem is. Why do I want what I can't have? And as soon as I can have it, I don't want it anymore.
You're right on target when you say, I don't know if I have a sexual addiction. Well, guess what? Yes, you do. And you know what? That's my specialty, Russell. So you're at the right place. Continue.
I meet women online, and I'm in a different part of the country. I travel all 48 states, so I love sex.
I hear self-esteem issues. You never felt good enough, and you didn't feel like you were getting what you should have then, and you're reenacting that now. Do you want to change that about yourself? I got an interesting email this week. He says, thank you for taking my email in question. My girlfriend and I listen to you on the radio, and she respects your opinion as I do. So here's the question. I've been separated for 9 months. I'm working on a divorce. Is it okay to date? I believe it is. But she's not comfortable with being around people who know my divorce is not final. Can you help? He kind of answered it when he said, if she's not comfortable, it's not a good gig. And Pat, you have some questions about dating?
I am 58 years old, and I've been divorced for years. I was watching the Oprah show the other day, and they were talking about...
They were talking about sexual desire.
How does that factor in if you're after menopause?
Obviously, being postmenopausal, you know, you aren't going to have the same pheromones, but then the men you're probably going to be dating, they're not going to have that need to mate with you, for children. How do you feel about hooking up with somebody else?
To bring Carol to your station, call John Quick.
And to bring Carol to your town, all you have to do is listen to blogtalkradio.com/sexhelpwithcarolthecoach every Monday night, 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. I'm proud to tell you that this is one of the very few shows on the air that deals with sexual addiction and deals with how it affects not only the person that's suffering from this obsessive kind of compulsive disorder, but it's a place where you can go if you love somebody who has a sexual addiction, whether it be a spouse, a partner, a son, you know, a daughter. Just today, I worked with a woman who recently got out of probably one of the best treatment centers in the United States, and she's struggling already. And who wouldn't be when you've lived a life, or at least a majority of your life, where you have learned how to intensify attention through sex? You know, we are a culture, we see it on TV, there's not... Oh, there's very few ads on television that aren't sexualized, that don't objectify women and sometimes men. And you know, we open up magazines and books. The newest bestseller, 52 Shades of Grey. I mean, that's all about sexual compulsivity. And that book makes it sound like it's okay. And so when my friends say, oh, Carol, have you read the book? It's just fantastic. I cringe. Because what I know to be true is whatever happens in our media, it gives permission for others to go out and experiment in the same way. So call me prudish, call me old-fashioned, call me traditional. I truly am not. I mean, I wouldn't be in this field if I were. But I do believe the boundaries are incredibly healthy. And sexual addiction is an issue of intimacy. It is an intimacy disorder, which means that people that have sexual addiction oftentimes have difficulty really maintaining a relationship with somebody they love, finding somebody they love, in part because they can't be transparent. They're not authentic. And when you're not authentic, when you can't be transparent, when you live in the world of secrets, lies, and deceit, you can't possibly have that intimate closeness that you need with another person. And if you don't have somebody in your life right now, you're not going to be able to find that, because so much of your life is going to be conning that other person if you do. So this show gives you guidelines on what you can do. And you know that we've had people that have written about love addiction on the show. Last week we talked with the Impulse Treatment Center, and they shared their free workbooks with you. If you go to www.impulsetreatmentcenter.com, you will find these free workbooks for both the partner and the addict. And tonight, I got to tell you, I am really excited. I wasn't sure she was coming on. She's a listener, and she wrote me this email, and she said, Carol, I stumbled across your show on iTunes. And just for all my listeners, you can go to iTunes and put in sexual addiction or sex help with Carol the Coach or Hope, Strength, and Recovery with Carol the Coach, and it will come up all the shows we've done so far on sexual addiction. So she happened to stumble across my show on iTunes, and she said, as I was looking for helpful resources and felt compelled to write you, what I found is there is very little help available to sex addicts, and even less to the partners of sex addicts until now. I'm happy to say that my husband of nearly 10 years has been clean and sober for 15 months. And while we definitely had our ups and downs along the way, our relationship is better than ever. Confirming his sex addiction was a devastating blow, one in which I never thought I could recover from. He has worked extremely hard going to therapy, attending SAA, and she really believes this is the reason he's been able to hang on to his sobriety. And I thought that was so interesting that she put, this is the reason he's been able to hang on to his sobriety. Because you know what? In the first 10 months, the first year, the first couple of years, sobriety is tough. You have to work really hard at recovering from old behaviors and patterns. She then said, now my husband encouraged me to seek my own individual help, which in the beginning I refused. I was angry and bitter, and who would blame me? I agreed to attend one COSA meeting, and COSA is that meeting for sex addict partners. It's for couples of sexual addiction. And she said, and I have been there since, 10 months later. Our current success, I believe, is due to both of us working our individual programs, setting boundaries, and at least for me, trying to understand the challenges the sex addict faces each day. So she's really working on her empathy skills. And that's what we also have sex addicts do. We have each person work on trying to understand where the other person is coming from, not so that you can enable him or her, but so that you can understand and have compassion for the struggle that both of you are facing. Likewise for him, he is trying to understand how his sexual addiction has affected me. And your program has helped with this. I don't know what our future holds, but I can tell you that since facing this problem, we have both grown as individuals and together. Thank you for the work that you do. And so I asked Wendy, I said, Wendy, please call the show. So for anybody out there listening, that number to call in is 646-595-3284. Again, that's 646-595-3284. And if you put in www.blogtalkradio.com and then /sexhelpwithcarolthecoach, up will come the screen and that number will also be available to you. So I want to give you some instructions in case you want to talk with Wendy or you want to talk with me or you have a question that you have maybe thought about as you're listening to the show. Now, I got to admit that the majority of my listeners listen after the show has aired, and that is absolutely okay with me. Would I love 500,000 of you to listen and call in all at the same time? Yes, I would. But what I know to be true is that we all have busy schedules. So, you know, go to iTunes, download these shows, and listen to it while you're walking around your neighborhood or doing your wash or taking a trip or going to work. I mean, whatever you need to do to get healthier and healthier. And I loved when Wendy said that actually, maybe I read into this, but actually I think she said that they're doing better now than they ever have in terms of they're at least, they believe that they have both grown as individuals and they've grown together. And that's what a 12-step program like SAA promises. Now, we've talked about Sexual Addicts Anonymous. We've talked about Sex Addicts Anonymous. We've talked about SA groups. All these groups are 12-step groups that actually help the addict to understand what their disorder is all about so that they can then not just deprive themselves of old behaviors, but replace old behaviors with new behaviors that increase integrity, that make you feel better about yourself. You know, as you listen to that intro of the show, Russell, the truck driver, had low self-esteem. Most people that have this disorder suffer from one, two, or three of these things. They suffer from low self-esteem, or they've actually experienced some sexual trauma, some sexual abuse, physical abuse, emotional abuse when they were younger, and on some level are reenacting the trauma as they get older and become adults. Or they have a propensity for a habit disorder, for obsessive compulsive thinking, and so they get involved in a behavior that then causes a brain lock, and they feel that they have to continue the negative behaviors over and over and over again. And when they do this, it does become a habit disorder, it does become compulsive, and they don't know how to unlock from the behavior. And so a good therapist, as well as a great 12-step group, sometimes a treatment center, very often group therapy, when you do all of those things, not only do you improve your sense of self and you stop those sexual addictive behaviors, but you improve your ability to relate to others, and you may feel whole for the very first time in your life. So I am excited to have Wendy on to tell her story. I said, as you might imagine, hey, what should I call you? You can certainly be anonymous. And she said, no, call me Wendy. And so, again, Wendy will be joining us here in just a couple of minutes. Now, you may wonder where you can go or what you can do if you believe that you have this problem, and I highly recommend my website, www.sexhelpwithcarolthecoach. I recommend the ITAP/Patrick Carnes website, which is www.sexhelp.com. And if you want to take your life to the next level and you really don't think you have this issue, but you know that you could take your life to a better place, then I recommend www.caroltheCoach.com. I am a psychotherapist and a life coach, and I've devoted my life to helping people and got involved in this specialty approximately 5 years ago because I knew that this was creating havoc in the lives of so many people. So I encourage you to call in if you have a question for Wendy or myself, 646-595-3284, and really believe that we all can make such a difference in the lives of others when we share a little bit about ourselves. So, Wendy, this is Carol the Coach. How are you this evening?
Hi, Carol. I'm doing great. Thank you for having me.
Well, I appreciate you coming on because it does take a lot of strength and courage to share a story, and I know you've done that through your 12-step group, but you probably never thought you'd be doing it on internet radio, so I so appreciate your honesty tonight.
Yeah, I never for a million years thought I'd be doing this, so it's
well,
it's
I'm
okay.
Always looking for people that have a story, and, you know, you had such a positive outlook, and what I know to be true is that anybody who has gone through this process, whether you're a partner of a sex addict or a sex addict, there always are ups and downs, and there always are rocky periods. So I just wondered if you would mind sharing a little bit about the discovery. How did you initially find out that your husband had a sexual addiction?
Well, I probably knew... My husband and I have been married for 10 years, and I probably knew all along, but it wasn't until about a year and a half ago that I got the full story and I got the truth of the whole situation.
Well, you know, I'm glad you mentioned that because so many people, they don't follow their gut feeling. And so they get little nudges that something's wrong or they find some information and the spouse explains it away and they want to believe the best in their spouse. So you said you probably knew the whole time that there was something going on, but it wasn't until about a year and a half ago that the real truth came out. So what were the small inklings or the nudges that said, hey, this guy has a problem?
You know, our intimacy was pretty much at a standstill. He never really made time, you know, to be intimate with me.
Mm-hmm.
It always seemed like he would rather be doing something else. And if I ever complained about anything, it was always my fault. You know, he made it feel like it was my fault or I was expecting too much or what we had was normal when I knew that it wasn't. You know, I started doubting myself. I started thinking it was me who had a problem. You know, he would stay up late at night by himself. You know, he would put the computer, like he had a laptop. He would always make sure that the computer was, you know, he was facing me so that I could never see the screen. Just various things like that. It just, a lot of little things. Just he had a job where he was a seasonal worker, so he had a lot of time off to himself, and he'd be home during the day, and nothing would get done that should have, you know. So he was, you know, busy with internet porn.
Well, and truly, I mean, that does happen. The behavior gets so compulsive that 1 hour turns into two, turns into four, turns into six, and addicts experience a lot of time distortion, so they know the time is flying by, but they keep deluding themselves saying, I'll catch up. I'll be able to do a couple hours of work and make it look like four or five. So when you came home, nothing was done. He was staying up late. The computer was facing him, not you. And you confronted him, but he kind of turned that around on you.
Right. Yes, I would bring it up a lot, and you know, I had discovered porn on my computer years ago, And I would even flat out ask him if he was doing that, and he would say, absolutely not. So, you know, and he just would lie straight to my face.
Okay, wow. And so not only did he create the illusion that nothing was wrong, but in some ways he put the problem on you, and you felt defensive and probably felt some guilt and confusion, which made you doubt yourself.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely.
So was it internet porn that it was his sexual addiction of choice, or were there other things that he was engaged in too?
He never had an affair, which I'm thankful for.
Mm-hmm.
He never had an affair. He never did like chat rooms or anything like that. His thing was internet porn and masturbation. And he did that anywhere from 5 to 7 times a day.
Mm-hmm. So he masturbated 5 to 7 times a day. So it's
yes.
No wonder that you guys didn't have a sexual relationship.
Right.
And, you know, for anybody who's listening, oftentimes what this does to somebody is it creates neurocircuitry in the brain whereby the only stimulation he can get is pornographic. And let's face it, we as spouses and partners, we're not porn. We're real life. We're moms, we're daughters, we're sisters, we are real life people. And so then we no longer become a turn-on. And so really, Wendy, what you were dealing with, you must have felt pretty rejected, and yet you didn't know exactly why.
Right, exactly. I always felt rejected. I would tell him I felt this way, and he would tell me, well, change it. Do something about it if that's how you feel. You know, you're wrong about how you should feel, or you shouldn't be feeling that way. But I always did, and he always turned it around on me that it was just my own insecurity. And
that's what addicts have to do. They have to lie, and they have to turn it around on other people because they don't want to look at their real issues. And that's one beautiful thing about the program is that when you're in SAA, you know, you're around other people that constantly call you on your behaviors. And what I have truly loved about that program for my clients is that, you know, when a man or a woman talks about issues in their own marriage, most oftentimes the rest of the group really helps him or her see how they have to be more empathetic to the spouse. So I've always said in general about my husband, if I want my husband to do something or learn something, I have to find somebody else to tell him. It can't just be me. That
right.
We're so close that he can easily dismiss me. But if he hears it from the neighbor or his buddy at work or somebody in a 12-step group, he's more likely to really get it. And so how did you discover for a fact a year and a half ago that this was a huge problem?
Well, things have gotten so bad for us. You know, I seriously didn't feel that our marriage would survive. You know, it just we were arguing all the time. He also had a major anger problem. You know, he used to be completely impatient. It was just everything that I didn't want in a marriage, and it was just going downhill. And one day I was on my computer, and I found a history. You know, I had looked and looked and looked. I knew that there was something, but I could never find anything. And then one day he must have slipped up and left it, and I found it. And I confronted him, and he did not deny it.
Well, finally, he admitted what you had known all along. And so was that history adult porn? Was it child porn? Was it man-on-man? Was it threesome?
No, it was normal, I guess, adult porn.
Okay. And so then what happened? Because obviously something got him to an SAA group.
Yes. He had been working. He was working graveyard at the time, and when I found it, I called him, I confronted him, he admitted it, and I told him we were done. I said, I can't do this anymore. You've lied. You've deceived me. I'm tired of feeling bad. You know, I'm tired of blaming myself. I'm not doing this anymore. And I basically said, we're through. When you come home, you pack your things and you leave. And
he set this huge boundary, didn't you?
Oh yes, he did just that. He came home, packed his bags. And he wasn't angry. He was, you know, embarrassed. He was caught. He was humiliated. You know, I was angry. You know, I wasn't even hurt. I was just more angry that he had been lied. He had been lying to me for so many years, and I fell for it and believed it. And I guess it was that night that he, when he left the house that night, he went to his first 12-step meeting. And
Do you remember the date of that night?
I don't remember the specific date, but it was a date in October.
Okay.
It was a pretty tough night.
Oh, I bet. And who did you use for support?
Well, I really didn't have anybody for support. I was embarrassed, but I knew that I needed support. I definitely knew I needed support. So, I had a lot of other things in my life happen to where I never dealt with it.
Mm-hmm.
So that next day, I called up a therapist in my area and made an appointment to go see her. And she's not a sex therapist specialist.
Right. She doesn't do sexual addiction specialty.
Right. But she has been amazing. Amazing for me, amazing for us. And it was really good to hear her validate some of my fears and just my thoughts. She's been great.
And so there were things about your childhood and your life that you feel contributed to your low self-esteem or your...
Oh, yes. Yes, I had been, I'm one of six kids, the youngest, the only daughter.
Mm-hmm.
I had been sexually abused by my stepfathers. I've been raped. My current husband is actually my second husband. My first husband, I found internet porn with him also.
Okay.
So, yeah, it was a history for me.
Oh, I bet. Now, do you think there's any correlation between you having had a really tough childhood, because you said you were raped as well as there was sexual abuse?
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm. One of the things I'm learning is, in my own 12-step program, I've been attending 12-step program now myself for about 10 months, actually influenced by my husband. One of the things I'm learning is we look for a certain kind of guy, and there is something about him being an addict that I actually probably was looking for.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I wasn't looking for him being an addict, but just the kind of person that he is, maybe a personality or something. There's a reason why we go for those kinds of guys.
Mm-hmm. And so tell me... you said that you're looking, but truly, more often than not, it's an unconscious familiarity with your past that then magnetizes those kind of guys to your future. It's like you know what it feels like to have been betrayed and exploited and sexualized, and so there's something unconsciously that knows that it needs to work things out, and so you gravitate towards that kind of a partner in hopes of working it out. And then some people do work it out, and they get healthy, and they get stronger, and they're no longer a victim. And then other people just never seem to get it. So there was really some incredible mental health in you because you got it through your help
right.
of COSA. Yeah.
Right.
And
yeah,
that must really make you feel strong.
It does. I still have a long way to go. I, you know, both of us together, I mean, we have a long way to go. You know, he's been attending his 12-step program. I attend mine. You know, together we go to therapy. Together we do couples therapy. And, you know, we talk all the time. You know, I mean, we still have our own, you know, our arguments. We still argue every single day. We argue like normal people now, you know, about petty things, which is, I'll take any day. It's just gotten, our relationship is so much better than I ever thought it could be.
Oh, that's fantastic. So you had said in your email that obviously he had wanted you to work on your issues and that you were almost insulted because you thought, you know, this isn't about me, buddy. This is about you. So what was it, how was it that you actually turned that corner and got the support that you needed?
Well, I guess he had heard about a 12-step program for me through his 12-step program. And you know, I talked about it with in our couples therapy, and my therapist said, you know, just to go, you know, just go. You know, you may benefit. It would show him that you're trying. And so I did. And the first day I was there, I heard things that sounded just like me. And I knew I was in the right place.
Oh, good. You know, so it was the commonality of what other people were saying where you said, hey, that's exactly how I feel, and you knew you were in the right place.
Right.
And there's a saying that says, you know, keep coming back. And so how often would you go? Because usually COSA is, you know, one meeting a week, or maybe if you're lucky enough to be in a big enough city, they have two or three. So how often were you going?
Well, I was going once a week, and I was going to therapy also once a week. And I really just didn't want my life being completely consumed with it, all about recovery.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wanted to, you know, I mean, there are some people, I live in a big enough city where you can go every day of the week if you want.
Mm-hmm.
Several days, several times a day if you choose to. But I really just, you know, I didn't want to be obsessed with it. So I went once a week, and I still go once a week.
Fantastic. And how do you use this group? Because, you know, some people go, and sometimes they say, for a 12-step meeting, the meeting actually starts before the group even starts and after the group. Some people go to dinner afterwards. Some people get together afterwards. What did you end up doing out of your COSA?
You know, I mostly just, you know, made contacts with other people. I, you know, sometimes we'd meet for coffee or something prior to the meeting, but, you know, I'm pretty much kind of to myself, so I never really did anything outside of that. And, you know, I mean, I have phone support if I need it. You know, we email each other, a couple of people that I, you know, seem to hit off with pretty well. And, you know, one of the things about my group is I really felt I was alone in my own journey, and yet I walk into a room filled, 20, 30 people in a meeting, and it just amazed me that how many people are affected by this.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And so you really are in a fairly big city for there to be 20, 25 people in your group.
I am.
That is a real blessing. Now, did you get a sponsor?
No, I haven't yet. I've been working on it. You know, I mean, it's you know, trying to find. I did ask a couple people that kind of fell through, and I've been, you know, but I do all my reading. I, you know, have read several different books. You know, I read the pamphlets that they provide on steps, and, you know, I just try to do everything I can without going overboard. like I said, I don't want it to just my life to revolve around this, but I do try to, you know, keep it at the forefront.
Well, absolutely. Now, what have been some of your favorite books to read?
Well, I mean, I can't really think of titles.
Uh-huh.
I'm looking for the one I recently, just various self-help books. I don't have any in front of me to give titles.
Well, that's fair. We're always looking for good bibliotherapy books, you know, things that people can really like. And I know for partners, Stephanie Carnes has an excellent book. And so if people are wondering, oh, gosh, what should I read? Her book is, and I'm kind of blocking on it too, but it's called Mending the Shattered Heart. And
right.
It's a fabulous book for partners because it really goes into everything, including disclosure. Now, disclosure is the process for any of our listening audience. Disclosure is a process whereby you actually, with support as a partner, get all the information out with the addict, and you find out everything so that there are no more secrets, no more lies, and no more surprises. Did you and your husband do anything like that?
Yeah, we did, with the support of our therapist. You know, and there was only so much that I really wanted to hear. You know, I mean, I've talked to people who want every single to the last detail, and I didn't want that. I just got the basics, and at least for right now, that's all I want to know.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's understandable. So you didn't want any more information than the basics because you didn't want it burning your brain.
Right.
Yeah, and I get that. So then, with the help of your therapist, you kind of got the basics, and you were able to decide when was enough going to be enough.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yes.
So when you said, you know, that there have been some ups and downs to your relationship, has he had any slips? Has he had any times where you caught him?
Yes. Well, yes, there has been. There hasn't really been any times where I caught him slip.
Mm-hmm.
He admitted to two slips on his own. The third time, he was, I guess, in his middle circle.
Mm-hmm.
He was watching. I had walked into a room as he was watching a bikini channel or bikini swimsuits on cable. And
right.
And as soon as I walked in, he changed it off and then lied about it. Lied that he was watching that.
Mm-hmm.
That was the last issue we've had. But, you know, since that, he's been, you know, sober. He's been sober since March of 2011.
Now, do us a favor. Explain to our listening audience what the three circles are.
There's the outer circle.
Mm-hmm.
The middle circle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, honestly, I don't know what all the circles are.
Well, I'm gonna share a little bit just for anybody who's going, what in the heck is that? The outer circle are the healthy behaviors, and they are things like exercise and getting enough sleep and communication time with your wife and taking your vitamins and playing with your kids and playing board games or, you know, listening to your favorite music. They're all those behaviors that bring about a sense of joy or peace and relaxation, and they're good, healthy behaviors. And then the middle circle are those behaviors that if somebody practices those behaviors, they're likely going to go back into their sexual addict. And that may be, well, as you indicated, a man who's interested in porn, which is inner circle behavior, if they get on the internet and they look at women in bathing suits, maybe they go to Victoria's Secret's website, maybe they watch some, not soft porn on TV, but maybe they watch some sex scenes. And for right now, when they're first in recovery, maybe watching sex scenes will trigger inner circle behavior. So it's all those behaviors that we call slippery slopes. You know, somebody can say, oh, that's not bad behavior. I'm not slipping. But truly, they're gateways to the very inner circle behaviors. And for some people, that's prostitution. For other people, that's chatting with women, affairs, exposing yourself, voyeurism, looking at other people, pornography. For a lot of people who have sexual addictive behaviors, they can't masturbate because the act of masturbating makes them want to look at porn. So those are the three circles. And when you said that you caught him on the internet and he was looking at, you said women in bathing suits, right?
Right.
Yeah, and you called that middle circle behavior because it sounds like you did not think that was porn, but you knew it wasn't healthy behavior.
I knew that it would lead to inner circle behavior.
Right.
And he admitted that it probably would have.
Right, and it's so important for people to kind of break down those behaviors so that they can catch themselves if they start to go in that. I just recently had a man who's just been doing a fantastic job. He used to go to swingers clubs. He used to cheat on his wife with men and women. He's in his 60s. He'd go to adult bookstores. He'd go to peep shows. And he's really been working a solid program. However, he just confided in me that he had been looking. He got a bigger screen on his telephone, on his cell phone, and as a result, he started looking at porn again. And it had not led to any of what he called his inner circle behaviors, but he had kept that secret. And so when you, as an addict, if you're listening, whenever you're keeping a behavior secret and you're hiding it from other people, it may be middle circle behavior or it may even be inner circle behavior. Regardless, it is behavior you need to get out of because you don't want to go into full-fledged sexual addiction behavior. And so how did you react to that when that occurred?
Well, as soon as I walked into the room, he clicked it off, and then he lied about what he was doing. And that was probably the worst part about it, is just being lied to when I knew what I saw.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I was angry. I was angry, and, you know, I felt even though we had put in all this work that his behavior was not going to change if he could just flat out lie to me. He did admit to his behavior, you know, within an hour, and, you know, we had to go to more therapy for it.
Well, he must be a wonderful guy because you've been hanging in there with him and you've seen the amazing changes that have taken place in him. Could you share with us two or three things that you have really noticed have shown improvement?
Probably the biggest thing is his attitude. He has a much more pleasant attitude. He seems happier. He's not as moody, as impatient as he was.
Mm-hmm.
That is something completely new to me because he's always been kind of the impatient kind of person. And
mm-hmm.
now he just seems to have a ton more patience, more patient with me. Our intimacy is just completely, completely the opposite of what it was. We're intimate 5 days a week. You know, we were intimate once every other week, if even that.
Right.
You know, he's just seems to be more motivated to do things around the house. He's a very handy kind of guy, and he's just seems more motivated to get things done now.
So he's less angry, he's more patient, he's more motivated, he's more physically intimate, and all those things then really make a difference in the closeness in your relationship.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like your therapist has been doing amazing work in supporting the both of you. Now, sometimes people have a therapist for a couple's therapist. Sometimes each person has their own individual therapist. In your case, your therapist has been there for you both and in couples?
Yes. Yeah, I at first initially, when all this happened, I went to see her by myself because I knew that I needed work for myself. Regardless of my husband's sex addiction, I needed to take care of myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw her for a while for myself, and then my husband agreed to come and meet with her, and we had several couples meetings. So that's how it kind of continued. I see her individually, and then we also see her together.
And about how often would you say that you go and see her personally?
For myself, I would see her once a week.
Okay.
Especially at the beginning, I really felt I needed it. It's a little more sporadic now. I see her maybe every other week to every third week.
Okay. Well, that's good because you're spreading it out a little bit because you don't need quite as much support.
Right.
So that's fantastic because, again, you can see that you're getting better. And if you started having some doubts or there was a little bit of trouble, you would increase that again.
Right, I would.
So what would you say is the number one thing that you have worked on the most when it comes to this marital crisis that occurred with your husband and, of course, affected you?
I think the biggest thing is just realizing that it really wasn't about me. I felt it was, and it really never was, and he told me that from day one. It wasn't about me, and I think a lot of people think that it is. And once I really understood that and believed in that, that was like my first step at getting healthy for myself.
Okay. And what would you say has been one of his greatest insights that he's actually shared with you?
Probably that he has the strength to just say no. I mean, to walk away from it and to turn his head from it. You know, he's had this, he's 50 years old. He's had this problem for as long as he could remember. And he's in control of it now, not the other way around.
Fantastic. So he's found the tools to be in control, and he has changed behaviors that have been in his life for 30 years by utilizing the 12 steps and by going to therapy and by practicing what he needs to both in your life and in his own. Now, is he going to get a different job, or do you think he'll stay seasonal?
Actually, he's already changed jobs. That was part of decided, but it's part of what he decided that he needed to do. So he's changed jobs. He changed jobs last year, and, you know, he's doing great with that.
Fantastic. You know, I know that a lot of times that's what people have to do is change their physical environment so they don't have the same temptations. And obviously, in his case, it was all the time he was spending.
Right. He definitely said having so much time wasn't helping him.
Right. And so have you, as you've explored iTunes, have you found other shows that deal with sexual addiction?
No, I really haven't. I hope to, but no, I never really have until I came across your show.
And how did you find the show? For our listeners that maybe aren't as savvy with the computer, how in the world did you do that?
Well, I just got on iTunes and typed in sex addiction, and your name came up. And I downloaded the podcast, and I was hooked after that.
Well, I appreciate that. I love a good listener. And so, you know, obviously tonight you've helped people who may be wondering if they should follow their gut, you know, because so many times women are in denial about their husband's sexual addiction. It's like if they listened to their gut, they would know, but they let the voice of reason talk them out of it. Or emotionally, they don't want to believe that their husbands are involved in this. And yet this is really an existing issue that's getting worse and worse and worse with technology and our cell phones and the internet. And I mean, I'm sure your husband's pornography use greatly increased when he got a computer and a cell phone.
Oh, yes. Yes, he's told me that.
So I want you to know you're a pioneer. I tell people this. You're a pioneer in this field. It's only been around with self-help for 30 years and really only in the last 8 or 9. So thank you so much, Wendy, for being a part of this show, for listening, and for contributing your story. I would encourage you to tell all your girlfriends to download this stuff, too, and to especially listen to your episode tonight.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you having me.
All right.
And I hope I can help others.
I know you will be helping others. And, again, I just so appreciate you having the courage, the hope, the strength, and the recovery to talk about what you had to do to get healthy. Because, you know, if your husband hadn't gotten healthy, you still had drawn that boundary and you said no more. And I really appreciate the fact that you did that, because that's actually what got him to the point where he knew he was losing the best thing he ever had in his life.
Right.
Yeah.
It started off, his recovery started off just keeping me. And then as he got more and more into recovery, he realized that this was not something he needed to do for me, but for himself.
So, okay, that's a good point. He did it for you initially because he didn't want to lose you, but then he realized, no, he had to do it for himself.
Right.
That had to make you feel pretty doggone good, too, because, boy, that takes the pressure off of you and puts it back on his own recovery.
Right. Yeah, it did. Did make me feel great.
Now let me ask you one other question. Does he have a sponsor?
He's working on that too. In his group there's more of a come and go kind of thing. There's not a lot of, at least from what, you know, I try not to get too involved in his recovery.
Okay.
But from what he's told me, you know, there doesn't really seem to be anybody that really sticks around. It's more of a come-and-go type of thing. So he's having trouble finding a sponsor.
Yeah, that is very, very difficult when, you know, men don't stick in the program. And I don't know what city you live in, but I'm out of Indianapolis, and I have to tell you probably 25% of the group are long-timers. 25% are there because they've just discovered they have a problem and they're still really questioning how big is their problem. And then 50% of them are well-meaning, but they come and go because they think they can do it on their by themselves. They think they can do it on their own. And then they, of course, come back because this is not a disorder that you can do on your own. You know, I hope your husband and you will consistently go to 12-step groups for at least a decade, if nothing else, for the support. I mean, I clearly hear you saying you don't want to be defined by this addiction. But at the same time, it's a wonderful place to get to work on all other areas of your life. So I hope you just keep coming back.
Absolutely. I plan to.
Okay. Well, again, thank you so much. And keep in touch and let me know how the two of you are doing.
I will. Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. Talk to you later.
Okay, bye-bye.
So as you can see, Wendy has done a fabulous job of her own sense of recovery. And if you are listening to this podcast and you're wondering, you know, what you need to do, her first ally was going to a COSA meeting, and that is spelled COSA. You can get on the internet and Google COSA meetings and then by location see what's available in your city or state. And if there isn't one, you know, you can contact www.sexhelp.com and share with them your dilemma, and they will help to hook you up with somebody in the area who may then be able to get you to at least one other person. Because here's the deal. 12-step meetings start when there's at least two people interested on working on an issue. So, you know, where Wendy said there were 20 or 30 people in her group, that is amazing. But that is not very typical. So if there's at least two of you in that group, you can do amazing work, and that is what the Big Book promises you. So there's never a reason not to get yourself to a 12-step meeting. And as you well know, and I've talked about it before, there are phone telemeetings for COSA and for SAA. And so you can look up telemeetings and always attend a meeting with, you know, 30 or 40 other people from all over the world. And so when people say, I didn't have a resource, I say, no, you didn't know you had a resource. You had a resource. If nothing else, it was a telemeeting. And although I highly recommend face-to-face, sometimes if you live in a rural area, that's just absolutely impossible. So you just got to have faith in a higher power that you'll get what you need when you need it, but you do have to do the work, and it is work. There's no doubt about it, but the benefits are amazing. So, you know, as I say to all of you at the end of a show, there will only be one of you at all times, so fearlessly have the courage to be yourself. And what I mean by that is you have to decide what your feelings are and how you can make the best of your life, and then get to the right therapist, get to the right books, and get to the right meetings to help you get there. So I appreciate you being a part of the show. Next week, we're going to be airing a repeat show on codependency because I am actually going to be on vacation. Let me just tell you a little bit about what I'm going to be doing. I didn't get married till I was 44, and my family of choice were my loved ones, my girlfriends, my guy friends too, but especially my girlfriends. They were fabulous, and, you know, they really... That's who I spent my holidays with. That's who I cried to. That's who I went to whenever I had a problem. And as a result, we are celebrating our 13th annual Girls Week. And I have a lake place in Brown County, Indiana. And the girls get together, and no guys are allowed, and we read books, and we float, and... we have Cosmos, and we make jewelry, and we watch self-help tapes, and we go for hikes, and we exercise, and we really practice that outer circle behavior. And so I highly recommend, if nothing else this week, that you look at what do you need to do to promote good mental and physical health in your life, and write down some of those objectives and practice them between now and the next time we meet. And that, of course, will be on July 23rd, at which point we have a wonderful woman who's actually written a book called House Interrupted. And this is a riveting book on sexual addiction and how it affected her. See you in 2 weeks, but tune into the show next week and learn more about codependency. All right. You make it the best week ever, and I'll check in with you soon. Bye-bye.